Committee on Audits to order. Members, we have just a couple of bills before us today. And so we are going to get started with House Bill 2026. And so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2026. And Jim, you want to give us a little rundown on this one, please?
Yes, sir. House Bill 2026 directs the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to adopt rules setting standards, policies, and procedures for internal audits conducted within state government. Directs the department to submit an annual report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and directs the department to submit proposed rules to the committee for review. Declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Thank you. And let's see, we have a sign-up sheet here. You know what, Kelly? Let's leave this one out just for a little bit so that if somebody else comes in that wants to sign up to visit with us about it, they can. And let's we'll just start and go right down the list since and it, when Senator Farioli comes in, then we'll have him come up. But George, let's go ahead and just start with you and Debbie Ferguson. Are you guys kind of together?
Yes, we are.
Okay, since you were sitting together, I thought maybe that you were. And so why don't you go ahead? Let's see. Nobody lives more than 100 miles. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning,
members of the committee. Pleasure to be here as always. My name is George Dunford. I am the Internal Audit Manager at the Department of Administrative Services. With me today, of course, is Debbie Ferguson. She is the Audit Director at Standard Insurance Company in Portland. She has graciously agreed to come down. She has, as many of you do, of course, very busy schedules, and she's due back in Portland very soon after the testimony, but she did drive down to talk to you about this bill because it is that important to her and to us at DAS, at the Department of Administrative Services. I apologize for that indiscretion there. And I will plug the piggy bank as soon as I go pick up my wallet.
Might as well just bring a checkbook here, I think.
Right. Well, I learned from Representative Butler years ago, you don't want to carry your wallet with you to a hearing, whether it be Senate or House. In any event, because Ms. Ferguson is on a tight time frame, I'd like to turn it over to her, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
That would be fine.
Okay.
Go right
ahead.
Good morning.
I wanted to come this morning, and I thought first I'd start by just talking briefly about my perspective on internal auditing and kind of from my perspective in working for a private company and specifically Standard Insurance Company. My objective with my audit department is to identify control weaknesses before they become big problems to management. We work with management when new processes, new systems are put into place to build in internal controls up front. We provide assurance to management regarding achievement of their business objectives, and we're in a unique position in the organization to really promulgate best practices by looking at processes across the organization. I view us as we're the control and the risk management, risk assessment experts within the organization. And when we partner with those people in the organization who are the experts in their areas of expertise on the business side, we can ensure that the processes provide optimal results. And we always aim to avoid unpleasant surprises for management. That's one of my primary goals. So thinking about that, internal auditing needs three things in order to be effective. They need objectivity and independence within the entity that they exist within. They need to have management support, and they need to have competent staff. And I see that House Bill 2026 will benefit all three of those key things that it needs to, that audit needs to be effective. I think it will also contribute to efficiency by developing standards and policies once rather than recreating the wheel numerous times within different departments. It will also provide for consistency across the departments. To the extent that you would want to perhaps compare audit results, you could do that if they're all being conducted under the same standards and in the same manner. You'd be comparing apples to apples. So those are really the things that I think that this bill will help in the state.
Is that it?
That's it.
You're finished?
Okay.
Well, no, that's okay. Let me just ask you a question real quick, and that is, do you see this as both looking at financial audits as well as performance audits in terms of this internal audit? I mean, do you sort of see this as being an encompassing review?
I mean, internal auditing in the private industry encompasses financial, operational, and compliance audits. So basically the broad gamut. Now, in state government, you have the Secretary of State audit, and I don't believe that this is going to be covering that, what they do, correct?
Mr. Chair, George Dunford, again, from the Department of Administrative Services. It isn't the intent, I don't believe, of the internal audit function to do purely financial audits, but there's no prohibition that we have internal auditors with that credential, with a financial credential, that could perform that function. And obviously, as it relates to internal controls, they would do that.
Okay. Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dingfelder and I have a sidebar conversation ongoing, and the reason I preface my question with that, Mr. Chair, is that Representative Dingfelder has asked an excellent question to me, and that is, what of the Association for Internal Auditors? There is a National Association for Internal Auditors, and her question is very rightly put, and I should let her ask it, but it's raised my interest as well. I was trying to read the bill to determine how it accomplished the things that Ms. Ferguson has mentioned, but what are the standards? Shouldn't we just be adopting the standards of the National Internal Auditors Association? And what is the name of the association, Debbie, George?
The name of this, it's the Institute of Internal Auditors, is the professional organization that that governs internal auditing. They do have a set of standards. Those are fairly broad, and I know within my organization we have developed specific procedures and policies that apply to our organization and also provide for compliance with standards as published by the Institute of Internal Auditors. They're established at a fairly high level, so to implement those effectively within an organization or within government, you need policies and procedures.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative Butler.
Then if excuse me, if there is a broad level of procedure, basically a standard operating procedure for established by the Institute of Internal Auditors, then should this bill not provide that the Oregon Department of Administrative Services adopt rules, set standards, and policies for internal auditing functions within state government subject to rules and guidelines provided by the Institute of Internal Auditors, and then go on to propose to delineate the kinds of things that will be of assistance to us as we seek for objectivity, independence, management support, competent staff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, thank you for your question, because these are discussions that the statewide Internal Audit Advisory Committee wrestled with, as well as, I'm sure you'll hear in further testimony, as well as the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. When I came back to the Department of Administrative Services, what I saw in internal audit was merely a policy that recommended that there be an internal audit function if agencies met certain criteria. Had over $100 million in biennial expenditures, $10 million in cash expenditures, or 400 FTE, full-time equivalents. We strengthened that. Governor Kulongoski actually had a directive, gave the department a directive to strengthen that policy, and we made it a requirement for those three criteria. And we adopted the so-called Red Book, as what Ms. Ferguson discussed, as the Institute of Internal Auditors broad standards. And we don't, the department would not be in favor of from straying from those standards at a minimum, because we have the Red Book standard right now. There's also, you'll hear from Drummond Cond in his testimony, certain agencies follow the Yellow Book standard, the GAO standard, the General Accounting Office standard. And that is also acceptable. That actually has more stringent requirements in some areas than the Red Book. So whether or not you decide to amend this bill and require a red or yellow book criteria, you will see that in terms of what DAS proposes as rules, the Department of Administrative Services proposes as rule, not only because we currently have that in policy, but because we also are required in this bill to come before the Joint Legislative Audit Committee with our proposed rules.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to state that I would be uncomfortable personally in establishing state guidelines and procedures when we have a national organization in GAO and an international organization in IIA that have broad guidelines that aren't even mentioned in the Oregon statute, and that we're attempting to try and come in underneath, but really not recognizing the full umbrella of the organizations that we're going to, basically the folks that we go to certify, to conduct and to oversee these kinds of internal audits, and we're not even recognizing the level of standard and the policies and procedures handbooks of those organizations. So I'm anxious to hear the testimony that's offered today, but I'm anxious also that the broad standards of the national and international organizations somewhere within the text of Oregon statute be recognized as we come back in and seek then for the implementation to mandate the levels. And it isn't Oregon statute that provides for independence or objectivity for internal auditors. These folks can't come to work in the morning until they, until they step up and take their Hippocratic oath, if you will, that says that I must be independent, I must be objective, I must have, management direction, I must have, continue in my competency, my updating of my various course material and those kinds of things, and recognize that, in less than a generation, we have moved from a time when we were on the abacus to a time when we are using electronic information systems. So this, I just couldn't express enough my concern and interest that we please take a look at the broader scope up above before we adopt this kind of legislation, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I ask the indulgence for the chair for one moment? Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, if you choose as a committee to recommend that the bill be amended, certainly the Department of Administrative Services would not have any objection to that whatsoever. The bottom line for us is, and the state, is when you shine the light by raising the bar and creating a statute with respect to internal audit, you do shine the light and do this in the open forum, and we're in favor of that, and we support that, and we urge you to support that as well.
And Mr. Chair, again, we have folks here that probably have memberships in at least the international organization, if not the national organization as well, and they could be of assistance in assisting us in writing those kinds of amendments into this particular House bill.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler. Excuse me, Representative Brown.
I want to ask that question.
And Representative Butler.
Essentially, Tom, then what you're saying, we're trying to reinvent the wheel here and might come out with a square one when there's already a round one out there?
I would hope not, Representative.
But is that correct?
Mr. Chair, to Representative Brown's concern, yes, I believe that we need to, rather than have us come in and with try and establish some of the guidelines that will work within the framework that Debbie has mentioned and her excellent testimony, that we'd really ought to go ahead and adopt some kind of language that says that recognizes the agency that gives us the policy oversight that establishes this criteria. Once you've established the criteria that they already subscribe to, then at that particular point, then we go ahead and delineate what it is in Oregon that we're doing. That we then, through the Department of Administrative Services, establish the standards, the policies and procedures, the reporting policy, the oversight and accountability within the state. And I think those are all kinds of things that the bill ought to do. I'm just anxious that the policy, or that the policy agency that develops the criteria under which these audits will be performed, which these folks won't be able to work without, is not even recognized.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Are there other questions for Debbie or George? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Farioli, would you be so kind as to come up, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for the record, State Senator Ted Farioli. I was co-chair of the Interim Audit Committee, and I'd just like to address this committee about House Bill 2026 with your permission.
Please do.
But first, Mr. Chairman, I have a question about the pig. Is this Butler's pig, or is this Chair Crummell's pig?
This is Chair Crummell's pig. It is the acronym pig.
And so acronym pig.
If you use an acronym without first explaining it, we're using the written rule here. So it's the if you use an acronym without defining it first, it's a buck for each one. And the money will be used for tsunami relief to Northwest medical teams.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Yeah. Vice Chairman, last time I used an acronym, it was 25 cents. What happened?
Well, now inflation's getting us. What can we say?
It can't be more than the CPI index, and it can't be more than 4%. I don't know. You know, you guys over here. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go ahead and prepay a dollar. I'm afraid I'm going to use the acronym.
There you go.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
To House Bill 2026, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee drafted the bill, and we did so because we thought that the committee had identified a gap in the kinds of audits that occur in Oregon. Obviously, the Secretary of State has the statutory authority to do our audits for us as a state function. Those include change audits, performance audits, and fiscal audits. We also have a duty, I believe we do, as legislators, to do legislative oversight over committees. It's my fondest dream someday that we get the leadership in the building to designate standing committees to have legislative oversight over particular agencies and to maintain those connections over time so that there is continuity built up. But that's not, for another bill on another day. But as long as the legislature is going to perform oversight functions, it's very often that these oversight functions are driven by the passions of particular legislators. It's sort of a hit or miss proposition, and people either get inspiration or they get angry about a particular thing and sort of push the audit committee into the direction of drilling into some issues. That has been at some times fruitful, and at other times is perceived by people just to be politically driven. And that is not necessarily fruitful. But I will say that there have been some bitter lessons over the course of the last couple of legislative sessions in the interims, particularly when the audit committee meets, and I'll just remind you of those. I think we all know that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife had some interfund transfer issues a couple of directors ago, and borrowing by the director from the state treasurer in inappropriate use of dedicated funds. There were some dollars put aside for Rocky Mountain elk propagation and bighorn sheep propagation that got used elsewhere. Dollars that were supposed to be dedicated for the hatchery program got used elsewhere, and these were dedicated dollars. I believe that internal auditors would have surfaced those issues a lot quicker and been able to perhaps advise the board of directors, the commission, that some of those actions were at least questionable, if not totally inappropriate. So the lesson for me as a co-chair of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee is that as long as the legislature wants to perform its oversight function, it ought to do so in a systematic way. It ought to set rules of engagement. People ought to know how those functions are differentiated from the functions that the Secretary of State is charged with in the Constitution. And we ought to also do those things in a way that is year-round, advisory, internal, programmatic. And so that's why I think we have the draft of 2026 before you. The whole idea of internal audits is to enable the management to review agency operations for compliance with all the laws, rules, and regulations in a consistent manner ahead of the curve. A lot of the audit function performed by the Secretary of State are post-transactional audits. They are backward-looking. the ongoing nature of an internal auditor, I think, would help better decision-making and surface information quicker. And I totally agree with Representative Butler. You know, we did not get into the issues of the professional societies and use the mechanisms that were delineated. The choice there was to try to do that or let a Department of Administrative Services write the rule. And we assumed that at some point in time that would occur when this bill was adopted. But the practices, whether you choose to create practices within the legislation or allow a rule to be drafted or adopt those that already exist, simply need to set forward what the rules of engagement will be for the internal auditors. And so I'd encourage you in that direction. I think this is a great bill because what it does is, in fact, it creates the first statutory framework for internal auditing, which we don't currently have. And so, you know, I would just bring forward to you the findings of our committee, which is the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. We think we need to create a statutory framework for internal audits. We think we need to make internal auditing a regular feature of the business of Oregon. We think once having done that, we'll dovetail nicely. We'll still have the hot-button issues for legislators who get inspired or angry. That isn't going away. They're still going to want to drill into those issues using probably in the interims the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and during the sessions our committee system. Definitely we're going to have the discharge of the constitutional obligations of the Secretary of State in the form of their audit functions. But this exists in the middle. It's primarily a management tool, and we just think it's an excellent idea to fill that gap. So if there are any questions, I'll be happy to take an attempt at answering them.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Farioli, for your excellent testimony. I just wanted to make certain that as we consider House Bill 2026 for some kind of discussion, further discussion, as part section 1 portion 3B talks about establishing the policies and procedures to ensure the integrity of internal audit process. Senator Farioli, having co-chaired the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in this past interim here, I'm anxious that we not do something that your committee would not have been anxious to do. And if we come back and restructure the bill to go back and say that the internal audits will be conducted in accordance with the national and international guidelines for policies, practices, and procedures, including the independence and integrity and the objectivity that are required for independent auditors, then would that be outside the scope and defamatory to what the intention of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee?
Mr. Chair, to Representative Butler's question, no, I don't think so at all. I mean, the point is that by and large, there are no internal auditor functions now. We have folks that are advisory to management teams in every agency, but they aren't, you know, categorized as internal auditors for the most part. Bottom line is you can choose to create this internal audit function, and you could pretty much equip them with whatever tool that you wish to. And I don't think that does any violence to the concept that the Joint Legislative Audit Committee brings forward. It's just, hey, here's one of what we need. And, you know, since you're going to go ahead and do this, you may as well get what you want.
Right.
So I would suggest to you that having the internal audit functioning a function and creating a statutory framework so that it's a legal function is the first step. Clearly, it was the intention of the audit committee that these folks in the internal audit business be within agencies but have a great deal of latitude about what they do. And certainly we want them not to be just functionaries of the department without regard to the ethics required or the independent nature of the auditor. So, you know, the point is these folks have to be willing to take tough stands and give the straight story to their commissions and boards and to their executive directors. And sometimes those are tough conversations. So we expected these people to be somewhat semi-autonomous within their agency. We may have quailed at the idea of having to write those rules. You know, we sort of left that to the hearings process and maybe even to the DAS at the end of the oops, Department of Administrative Services, at the end of the day. But reference to an existing society doesn't do any violence to the concept at all.
Thank you.
Do you think then, so for example, take an agency like Department of Fish and Wildlife and the issues that they had there been an internal auditor that was reporting directly to the board as opposed to the director, then creates that independence so that we're so that they can truly give the input that's necessary?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be without question. The fact of the matter is at one point in time in a hearing room in this building, it was determined by the committee that the board did not know that there was interfund borrowing going on. The board had not been advised.
Okay.
And it would be usual and customary in cases where fund transfers are made, et cetera, at least to have those given a nodding approval by the board of directors, or at least the chairman should have been aware. So the point is, I think that would have surfaced earlier. And I'll also just point out, you know, regardless of where you are on the political issues regarding SAFE or with the issue of replacement of the lottery directors, the usual and customary business practices, the appropriateness of the use of state funds for appropriate purposes are all issues that I think internal auditors would help managers and directors more thoroughly understand. Having somebody on staff that you can confer with, that you should confer with, who has audit authority over your decisions, seems to me to be a very bright idea. So I think, you know, in at least those three cases, we would have seen some different actions in the agencies.
Do you see potentially agency heads, directors, sort of having a problem with their internal auditors and trying to create conflict with them as far as the board is concerned if they don't like, if the auditor's not telling them what they really want to hear or
well,
what they want the board to hear?
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question, and I guess I'll give you an analogy, if I could. Every agency has access to a representative from the Attorney General's office. And every agency head spends a lot of time in conference with their designated AG. Very often we don't like what they say. You know, very often what they say it confounds the objectives. But the conference is necessary because it keeps those agencies on track with, you know, with the Constitution and with the statutory requirements and the ORSs. That conversation has to occur. And, you know, why wouldn't it also be logical that they have some access to folks for the proper procedures for handling the financial decisions and disclosures that are required by our sunshine laws and by the state constitution and the Oregon Revised Statutes and the administrative rules. So it just seems to me that if you're going to make decisions in the kind of environment that we live in today, there's two pieces of advice that you need, legal and financial. Mm-hmm. And this would give them a sort of, not a completely arm's length, but a sort of semi-autonomous internal auditor that would just be able to advise them about what's reasonable, what's usual and customary, what fits with the ethics of the issue, and you know, what complies with the rules. It just seems to be a logical thing. And failing those things, the internal auditor has another obligation, and that's disclosure to others.
Would you see this, Senator, as being set up as a service that the Department of Administrative Services would be offering or giving to the other agencies? And would you also see this as, in addition, if that were the case, then would you see this as being a either a an assessment or a rate-based? And I guess, thirdly, would you see it as being a as the auditors working for the Department of Administrative Services versus the department working for the other agencies that are being served by it?
Mr. Chairman, I think those are all choices that this committee needs to make. And the fact of the matter is that the place where we sort of left off in our consideration of this concept was we needed to create the statutory authority. So that was the first basic foundation. The next thing we thought about was, would this be likely a designation of personnel within an agency? and it could be somebody they already have on staff. But, you know, creating that statutory authority gives the agency the opportunity to make the designation. Is it a service provided by another agency? It's possible. Is it something that Department of Administrative Services might do? It's possible. We use hearings officers from the Department of Justice. We have, you know, some folks are roving, you know, as they're needed. But if you were asking me personally, not speaking for the committee, just for myself, it was my understanding and my feeling that in order to know a department thoroughly, you almost had to have an internal auditor on staff. That person would know the daily workings of the organization, follow the daily changes of their administrative rules and the session changes that come biannually, know the objectives of the managers and the commissions and boards that serve the agencies. And that kind of knowledge usually doesn't come out of a pool. That kind of intimate knowledge usually comes out of somebody connected with the daily operations. So I view the internal audit function, depending on the size of the agency, as being something that was actually integral to the functioning of the agency. Now, that certainly would be with the major agencies in the state of Oregon, but we got over 100. So at some point in time, I think there is some benefit to looking at the idea of consolidating internal auditors for a number of different small agencies. So, but again, Mr. Chairman, I'll defer the details to this committee.
Okay. And finally, Senator, there's an emergency clause in this bill. Do you see that as being necessary?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we must have, because we stuck it in there. I think the idea was the sooner we started down this road, the more likely it was to get designations from within the agencies that wanted to use personnel that they already have for an internal audit function and get it started. In terms of an emergency, well, not in comparison with what we had yesterday in the Senate, no. Come on, you guys. You read the papers. Okay.
Okay.
Who cares?
Yeah, I hear you.
One of the regular guys over there.
Might as well have been on Mars.
Okay.
Seven of them never knew what happened. They just sat there. What's Peter doing now?
Are there other questions for Senator Ferriello? Senator, thank you very much. Appreciate
you
taking
Chairman,
time this morning.
We get to have him for open air exercise on Saturday.
Thanks. Okay. I would like to call Drummond Kahn, and can I call a couple of you up at the same time, and Bob Refine? I know you guys probably aren't together, but that's okay. And what I'll do is have
them on opposite sides for
you. This works in other committees to have.
Sure. No. Could I defer to the director to speak first?
No, your name's on the list first. You go ahead.
I won't know which ones to be marking here otherwise.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Drummond Kahn. I am the Chief of Audit Services for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I support this bill. It was filed pre-session by Governor Kulongowski at the request of the Department of Administrative Services. I concur with the perspectives of my colleagues who have just provided their testimony in support of the bill. As an internal auditor in state government, I believe that this bill and its framework and law will assist auditing, oversight, and accountability. That the Department of Administrative Services adopting rules, setting standards, and policies for internal audit functions within state government will help ensure the integrity of the state internal audit process remains valuable, and that these continue to be important activities for the state and its internal audit functions. The bill will serve to enhance accountability in the state. As Mr. Dunford mentioned, at the Oregon Department of Transportation, our audit function follows what's known as the Yellow Book, which is the generally accepted government auditing standards. In training, we distinguish this from the Yellow Pages. But the Yellow Book is important because it's standards peculiar to government auditing that we follow as part of our role around with Department of Transportation around the country. That tends to be the standard that most of these transportation departments follow. Many of my colleagues in the room, however, follow the Red Book, or the Standards for the Professional Practice of Internal Auditing, which is promulgated by the Institute of Internal Auditors. They're very similar standards, but there are a few differences that affect the operations, frequency of peer review, some layer of review issues, and some other specifics. But the general standards encompassed by both, and the general standards now in the Oregon Accounting Manual, are very similar and very comparable in terms of the basic standards of independence, due professional care, and the other standards that all auditors follow, whether they're in government or the private sector. So with that, I do support the bill. I think it will provide an important statutory framework for internal auditing, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Kahn?
Mr. Kahn, I don't know how long you've been with ODOT, but...
About 5 years.
So you'll remember a few years ago when there was the issues that were being raised about the efficacy of some of the programs and the efficiency at which the department was spending funds, and this whole thing, and the department went through several different reviews, if you will. And not necessarily to try to drum up old memories or bad memories for you, but do you think that the internal auditing functions that you already had in place and were performing helped you in terms of being able to go back and provide the information that was being requested in those various reviews that were going on and actually made, I guess, the reviews more meaningful?
Yes, one of the reviews, I think we had reviews by KPMG, which I think is an abbreviation involving Pete Marwick, as well as the firm Dye Management. Those contracts, as I recall, and this was before I took over as the manager of the function, but in the late 1990s, those contracts were managed through our audit and review services, which became our internal audit function. So that office was well aware of those contracts. I believe it managed and helped set scope for some of those contracts to provide a layer of independent oversight in terms of contracting. And that's something that internal audit functions around the state do by being, in some cases, the contract managers or contract administrators for those outsourced reviews. The Department of Transportation, I think, benefited from a series of reviews by both internal and external parties. The Secretary of State conducted a series of reviews around that time period, as I recall. So internal auditing is not holding the patent to all reviews of a particular area, but we see ourselves as part of a balance of oversight for government. As Senator Fairlie mentioned in his testimony, we are internal to the department. We work there every day. We understand its operations. And I think that, balanced with when needed, other reviews, is very appropriate. In fact, one of the standards in generally accepted government auditing standards calls on us to use topic and subject matter experts when the staff that are internal may not possess those specific skills. So, for instance, if we're looking at an engineering project, those standards would allow us to hire a professional engineer on contract or on a loan system of some sort to help us with that issue. And the use of experts is appropriate either as part of an existing internal audit or as a contract that's spun off from the audit function.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Kahn? Mr. Kahn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Repine.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. I am not an auditor, and my favorite color is orange, so if that helps figuring out what direction you want to use. Between the red and the yellow, it would make orange. Sorry, a little early morning joke.
We're going to say university joke.
It may be.
Okay. I've been on this job now for starting 8 years with the agency, and in that period of time, I know that it has been the interest and of the Legislative Assembly and of the agency directors to deliver the best quality product and process that we can to the citizens of this state. At the ending of last session, I was asked to serve on this group called the Interim Audit Advisory Committee that was set up with under the direction of Department of Administrative Services and Director Gary Weeks, but now is under Lori Warner, to start thinking about the roles of internal auditing. I think the makeup of that group would be important to you, is because we brought together department heads, internal auditors such as Drummond, and people of other expertise, but I think the key piece, we brought in outsiders. We brought public partnerships to that table, as you heard from Debbie earlier, who is from Standard Insurance. We had an internal auditor from West Coast Bank, their head auditor, and we also had the head auditor from Nike. And I think they were able to help, you know, bring some finesse to the discussion of why it plays a critical role in the outside business world, and why government and government agencies should have some of that same opportunities that that are given to outside businesses to have that internal look for the auditing purposes. So I think the discussion was very healthy. Many of those discussions that we had are in the bill that you have in front of you today, House Bill 2026, as recommendations by that group. I think the initial part, or the part that I like about it as an agency director, is to have something that's both standardized and institutional. However we come about getting that is extremely important. I think both from an agency standpoint, for the ability to have internal auditors be able to go and assist other agencies, and they're using the same standards or parameters to do that internal auditing if you had to share, or to be able to, as one was mentioning earlier, if an auditor would deal with two agencies for the purpose of helping them with internal discussions. If the size of my agency, for one, if you heard Mr. Dunford's example of what causes the agencies that are under consideration for internal auditing, I'm not an agency over 400 people. I'm not an agency that has $10 million in cash, but I do have an agency that has over $100 million of expenses via my bond programs that I have. So we're small in number, but we are a huge or large value of financial investment for the state of Oregon. So I can see my agency partnering up with another agency to maybe share an internal auditor, which would have then continuity and similarities in how their functions would be for two agencies. I think the other part that's extremely important for the Legislative Assembly, for you today and for your successors, is to make sure that there's consistency. I think you have all in your careers have seen, we all in agencies run our own little agency processes, and many times they are similar but oh so different. And it gets very both frustrating and confusing when we're trying to report things out to either the public or public officials in giving you information that would help support any kind of decisions you might make. So having a process that is both internal and very structural would be very, I think, advantageous to the legislative fiscal process, to you as legislative members, and to the citizens at large. I think the key to that would be is that feedback that you will be able to get on an ongoing basis to be able to monitor and understand what agencies are trying to do in the environment we work in today, to make sure that at the end of the day we're delivering both quality products and we're performing at the highest level and delivering satisfaction to the citizens of the state of Oregon. And I think that's what this effort is being attempted in House Bill 2026.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Butler?
Thank you.
No, not questions for Representative Butler. Representative Butler, you have a question for
Representative
Mr.
Riepine. Director Riepine, do you have internal audit functions then that are ongoing at any level within the agency?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, we have made for the last three bienniums have asked for staffing positions for internal auditors, and we've not been able to successfully accomplish that. We have a series of auditors that are going on. We are on the annual hit list for the Secretary of State's auditors because of the business we do and the business environment we work. So we actually have auditing functions going on the financial side almost annually on an ongoing basis. We also will have audits that are pulled by the federal government for different applications of funding that we monitor and are reported and are held accountable to the federal government. But as far as an internal auditor that would be looking at these type of specific issues, it probably falls more down to my steering committee and my chief financial officer trying to go in there and try to mine out some of the things. But having these independent set of eyes, I think, would be very beneficial for all of us.
So if I can follow up, Mr. Chair, Director Riepine, how do you envision that independent set of eyes? That person would work in your staff and obviously be accountable back to you. I'm now going back to what Senator Ferrioli had indicated with regard to the problems we had previously with the director over at Fish and Wildlife. I mean, they're saying, you know, you can take a giant leap somewhere. I need money, and there happens to be money in that fish fund over there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, again, that was a discussion that the advisory group had, as you heard Senator Ferrioli mention from the Joint Audit Committee's discussions. I have been presented through the discussions of the internal advisory group a series of potential ways you could structure it. Our private sector members have a reporting process that generally goes to the board of director or the CFO, but can have access to the board and the board of directors for if they find that they're not getting the attention that they need for the chief financial officer. So I think there's probably, and again, I'm not probably the best person to say this, but there, from what I understand, there's about three or four different approaches you can accomplish this so you can maintain the objectivity and the integrity of the process. And for one, actually, as a director, I would be more inclined to yield that control over somebody else to some other person or entity, either in my department or outside of my department, to make sure that my hands are clean. I think otherwise you lose the value of the internal auditing. It becomes the chicken guarding the hen house.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So Director Epine, let me not only you've got a wealth of experience both within housing and within state government and within the many branches of state government. In that process, would it be conceivable then that you might be assigned a permanent full-time, similar to your the folks that are assigned to you from the Attorney General's office, an auditor from the Secretary of State's office, perhaps from their internal audit division, that might be assigned full-time? Excuse me, that would not be responsible to answering to you, but would be the primary beneficiary of that information? Is that kind of what might happen here, or an idea, concept?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I think that is one of a variety of scenarios. That would obviously create the independence you'd need. I would be probably directly paying for the person, but the person, in fact, would be working under more of a controls aspects of another agency that would have greater overview. I don't see any problem with that. I think there's probably a series of models that could be used. But again, I think it's important. Again, in Oregon, as you heard some of the earlier testimony, Senator Ferrioli said there's over 100 entities that could be involved at some point in time with internal auditing. One shoe's not going to fit all, so you might have a series of processes where you might have that direct process under the state Secretary of State's office that assigns out people who work specifically for agencies. You might have for lower level internal auditing purposes some other standard, but I think that's the process that we still need to engage in discussion on so we can find the best fit for Oregon and the business that we do in Oregon.
Thank you, Gregory. I'm trying to solicit is that a functionable method to work? Is it an objectionable method to work that might work? Because we do have an emergency clause on this directory plan, and so I'm going to guess that with an emergency clause, we immediately move forward and try to implement some kind of internal auditing program as overseen by the Department of Administrative Service. So I'm trying to figure out what in the best of all worlds, and your again because of your wealth of experience and background, both inside and within the political system, within government, can you come up with a better scenario?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, again, I have to plead some ignorance in this only because I'm the carpenter learning to be a bean counter, so to speak. No offense intended there. And I didn't even do that with using an acronym. But I think, Representative Butler, that's the discussion that still needs to take place. I don't know whether or not I'm the most certified, smartest, Senator Courtney might say, person to give you that directive. I want to have something that works very functional and fashionable for the state of Oregon and meets the requirements of what the intent of this piece of legislation is. How we come about it, I think, is that next discussion we'll have. And if I remember in the bill, I think the review process says that the rules would either be reviewed or set forth to the Joint Interim Committee or some committee that would have jurisdiction during the interim so that those questions then could be fleshed out a little bit more. I think it's important, extremely important, we do this right before we put it into motion. To put it into motion and find out that we're going back and recrafting it and making modifications will not be healthy for what we're trying to accomplish. So in this case, even though it has an emergency clause on it, I think that what it will allow is the discussion to start sooner than later and have it thoroughly discussed so whatever the final resolve is will be presented in a way that would be supported by all those who were involved in it.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question of staff at this particular point. I don't see a subsequent referral on this particular House bill. I assume that it would have to be referred to Ways and Means to develop how this, what kind of financing might be necessary.
It does not have a subsequent referral, and I do have a fiscal statement in here that indicates there's no expenditure impact on this particular bill.
Thank you.
Okay.
Be off the cheap and turn along.
Okay.
And I realize it just establishes some of the framework.
I think one of the things, though, too, is it is as well as establishing the framework, however, is at, utilizing existing resources within agencies is going to be probably the order of the day for accomplishing this kind of a goal. And I think then what happens is this becomes one of our legislative priorities. Are there other questions? Representative Rosenbaum, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Repine, I know that more than most people, you appreciate the challenges that we're facing from your past experience, and so you are well aware that it's not just the reality of finding efficiencies or things that need to be corrected, but also the public perception. So I wanted to ask you, do you think that this bill could do something to improve the public's view of how government is operating?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, that's a great question. I would actually tell you that in one of our very earlier meetings with the Internal Audit Group, we actually had press cover the aspects of that meeting here from the Statesman Journal to talk and make a story about it in the local newspaper. And with that said and with his action, this becomes, I think, one of those very critical pieces of accountability that you as public officials wrestle with. I, as a state agency director, are always making sure that we're, how do I defend or to demonstrate that we are doing the best we can do on a day-to-day basis. I think that's also very critical in how we frame these rules. To make sure that there is this clarity of the chain of command and responding and responsibility of who gets the information and what is done with that information. Internal auditing, I think, as Debbie mentioned, is a function of helping out in front, which I think is very important because we are just, like anybody else, agency directors and agency folks, we are able to be very successful, and on occasion we maybe do things that don't always work out in the best interest that we thought. We need to be able to have somebody who's looking at us as we develop those processes in the heads-up part of it before we get too far down the line where the consequences become the political headline test that gives just government, public officials, and everybody a black eye that takes years, literally years, generations sometimes, for people to forget about or to forgive about. And the stories that the chair was talking about with Fish and Wildlife, it was years ago. I'm sure, and it was an unfortunate event. But had internal auditors looking at this, look at the press, the ink that we could have saved in a positive vein, as opposed to having to defend something that was an anomaly in government when we have 99.9% of people doing good things every day.
Good point.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dingfelder.
I have a question.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. I'm not sure if this is more of a sort of a question, but also a statement as well. And I guess as a follow-up to Representative Rosenbaum's question, and we have been hearing a lot lately, and I hate to say this, but about ODOT and the issues there with some of the employees supposedly taking some kickbacks. And a question would be, would an internal audit... And I'm trying to figure out if an internal audit would catch something like that, because I'm not sure it would ever be documented. Or, one of the things that we did last session, which I did not support, was reducing the funding for our Ethics Commission, which is sort of the flip side of this discussion about restoring public trust and transparency in government and credibility. And so I don't know if either of you have comments on that, but I'm trying to figure out, would an internal audit find something like that, or we need to continue to figure out how to fully fund our ethics commission, so where that type of issue would probably have been brought up if not caught through an internal audit.
Chair,
on the spot, but it did happen at ODOT.
Chair, former Representative Dingfelder, internal auditing as well as external auditing can't and don't offer guarantees of what they'll detect. We're designed to provide assurance and oversight and a place for issues and concerns to be brought. There's no assurance in the future that any particular mismal or nonfeasance will be detected by any auditor or by the police or by anybody else, in the same way that going to your family doctor doesn't guarantee that every disease or problem will be promptly detected. We do what we can. It's subject to resource limitations, and we do serve as both a sounding board and a place of initial reporting when concerns are brought up. And in the case you're referring to that had a lot of media coverage, our department, I believe, learned about it from another state, and one of the first places that the person in our department who got that call came was to our Internal Audit Services office. We took the action of promptly looking to see if that firm was a vendor. Within, I believe, a day or two, if I'm recalling correctly, the vendor was turned off as a vendor in the system, so no further purchases could be made. And I believe within one or two business days, the matter was referred to state police because it appeared to be a law violation. So the system works, if not in all immediate detection of anything wrong, at least in the prompt referral and disclosure and disposition of issues. But even audit textbooks talk about audit risk and detection risk, which are the odds that you won't find something wrong. When they do come up, though, we have a structure in place that helps respond to that in the same way that auditing, whether it's internal auditing, our colleagues at Secretary of State, whether it's the Ethics Commission, are all venues or safety valves once those issues are brought up to be dealt with.
Okay, and just a follow-up. You actually answered my second part of the question, which was, you know, what kind of intercommunication do you have if something like that happens to make sure that the Ethics Committee and the Secretary of State and that information is all shared also with other internal auditors? Because obviously, like you said, many of the vendors are working not just with one state agency, but with several state agencies. Mm-hmm. So thank you. That helped answer my question.
Thank you.
There any other questions for... Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Let me now call Denise, is it Teixeira?
Teixeira.
And Craig Stroud, and Denise will have you go first, and then Craig.
Chair Crummell and members of the committee, I'm Denise Teixeira, Internal Audit Administrator for the Oregon Department of Corrections and Chairperson for the Chief Audit Executive Council. I am here to provide information on House Bill 2026, which was pre-session filed by Governor Kulongowski at the request of the Department of Administrative Services to adopt rule-setting standards, policies, and procedures for internal audits conducted within state government. The internal audit function is an integral part of executive management. It provides objective assessment of evidence and independent opinions or conclusions, builds credibility with an agency, and provides valuable advice to agency decision makers. However, there are no state laws or rules governing internal audits. The only state framework now in effect is in the Department of Administrative Services Oregon Accounting Manual Policy. This bill would provide both a framework to ensure a minimum level of competency among agency internal audit functions and a structural base so that internal audit functions can continue to add value to their agencies and state government. It also would promote independence and objectivity in the internal audit function by creating clearer expectations. Specifically, this bill would set minimum criteria by which the operations of an internal audit department is evaluated and measured, increase internal audit effectiveness, and ensure ethical culture and independence of the internal audit function.
Okay, thank you. Questions, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Denise, as I read what your expectation here is, that the penultimate paragraph that talks about this bill providing both a framework to ensure minimum level of competency amongst the internal auditors, Is that what you envision this bill doing, or should the competency be to a level that the internal auditors meet a standard before we start to regulate them?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Mr. Butler. The minimum level of competency, if you have an internal auditor who is certified internal auditor or a certified public accountant or a certified information systems auditor, they do have a framework with which they have to comply with. However, if you do have an internal auditor who does not have a professional designation, they're not really required as heavily to follow any type of a framework. And so, therefore, what this bill would do is provide that minimum competency level.
Mr. Chair, I'm anxious that there are organizations that certify these people that Mr. Chair Teixeira has mentioned. That is that there are certified internal auditors and other certifications and credentials that are being given to organizations. My angst is that we're not. It appears that we may be creating our own designation for levels of auditors. I don't know that we ought to go down that path at this particular point, but I appreciate that testimony. I'm going to look to after we receive the testimony of Mr. Stroud, then I'm going to look to you, Mr. Chair, and to George Dunford and others that I've worked with and have confidence in to maybe help us craft the kinds of things that this bill needs in order for us to go forward with national standards of policies and then begin to build our framework in the state of Oregon to build that accountability.
Okay, I appreciate that. Are there any other questions for Ms. Teixeira? Okay. Mr. Stroud, Craig?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Craig Stroud. I'm the former director of internal audit for the Public Employees Retirement System. I say former because about 3 weeks ago I moved out of internal audit into an administrator position with Oregon PERS. As a bit of history, I spent 8 years with the Secretary of State Division of Audits. Started as an entry-level auditor, basically right out of college. Worked my way up to an audit manager there, and then transitioned over to Oregon PERS about 3 years ago. Much of the testimony that you've received today, I'm in support of, so I will pretty much tailor my testimony to the aspects of House Bill 2026 and the specific questions that have been asked that I think I might be able to shed a little bit of light on and provide a little bit of my opinion. My PERS director, Mr. Paul Cleary, wanted me to make it certain in your minds that I'm testifying not on behalf of the PERS board today, nor really on behalf of PERS management, but rather as my background as a professional auditor. So to jump right in, if you will, I would like to jump to Section 3B of the bill, which speaks to the integrity of the internal audit process. And to me, this is really the cornerstone of an effective internal audit function. That is to structure the reporting relationship of the internal auditor to management and to an oversight body in such a way that you do have this safety valve mechanism. The private sector model is typically to have a board of directors, which then has an audit committee of independent folks who the internal audit function would report to directly. The audit committee would help to prioritize their work, would receive their audit reports, would follow up with management on corrective actions, and really acts as that independent body between the auditor and management at times when it's needed. Now, I'll tell you from my experience that nearly all of the time, internal auditors need to work very closely with agency management in a very collegiate kind of complementary manner. And what that does is it fosters an environment where agency managers are very comfortable coming to the auditor, posing difficult questions that they're wrestling with, laying out courses of action for the internal auditor to provide input and kind of that independent set of eyes and ears, and maybe looks at things in a little bit different of a flavor. And I can tell you from experience that I do get those types of questions all the time. And kind of the difficult aspect of this, and Representative Bingfelder, you kind of touched on maybe the Department of Transportation where an issue comes up that was not caught. I can't quantify or even anecdotally tell you of any issues that in my past I might have provided some input to that resulted in an activity stopping that could have resulted in negative ink for the state or a department. But I am certain that in my daily interactions with folks, I help to frame their decisions and provide kind of a safety cushion for their decision-making process that does result in good governance and good actions by the public bodies. So maybe to speak to Representative Butler's question about how to actually structure this, we have over 100 agencies that would qualify for internal audit coverage within the state. They vary in size from 10,000 folks at the Department of Human Services to maybe 20 or 25 on a very small agency and even less than that, full-time equivalent staff in a border commission, let's say. So it's not the one-size-fits-all approach. And what the standards, such as the Institute of Internal Auditors, standards for the practice of internal auditing, they're in that same boat in that they have over 80,000 constituents worldwide who are members, yet they've formulated a framework that tries to work for one-person audit shops and also works for agencies such as Standard Insurance that might have teams of 25, or Nike that might have teams of even larger than that. So they're also trying to give a broad enough framework that the actual internal audit function can work with management, the board of directors, and whatever oversight and management bodies exist to come up with a solution that works for them. So using that kind of as the basis for why I think one size does not fit all, I would, and there's actually one more piece to this, is that there's not one set of standards that fits all. We've got the Generally Accepted Government Auditing Standards by the Government Accountability Office, which is the National Congress's oversight body. You've also got the Institute of Internal Auditor Standards. You've got the Control Objectives for Information Technology Audits. So there's really and there's even more sets of standards. And I'll tell you how I apply that is sometimes if I'm looking at an information technology project, I will pull from the information technology standards. They dovetail very nicely with the broader framework of the Institute of Internal Auditors, yet it provides me the opportunity to use the tools I need to structure my work. But to really speak to 3A and the integrity, what we need to do is ensure that if the oversight body that the internal auditors report to has some independence from management, and in the state arena, how you might be able to structure that is to pull together an oversight committee, an audit committee, if you will, of not entirely maybe composed of folks from outside of a department or an agency, but maybe have some, so that you have a forum where it's not strictly folks that are directly tied to the payroll of that agency. And I have seen within the state where that has happened. And then you've got agencies such as PERS, which have a board of directors, and we're able to kind of align much more closely to the private sector model. So what we want to do is build a structure a bit more concrete than just saying the standards for internal audit. We want to adopt some national standards. I would totally agree with that concept. But then we really want to write and prescribe and rule a little bit more detailed framework that could fit the varying sizes and missions of the agencies within the state of Oregon. And with that, I wrap up my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions for Craig Schreck?
Just one question for Craig. Craig, are you a certified internal auditor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I am not. I actually have another designation, which probably is less meaningful, the Certified Public Accountant.
Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel, Representative?
That's a job empty in garbage cans.
We're just kind of laughing because Representative Butler shares your
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell. I knew that. I hope he takes my joke in good jest.
Oh, we take everything in stride up here. Are there other questions for Mr. Schreck? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, both of you. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2026? Okay, seeing none, then what I'm going to do, before I close the public hearing on House Bill 2026, Representative Butler, would you be willing to lead a work group
putting together some amendments to address the standards issues that you have raised with regards to this bill, because I think with those sorts of questions answered, I think that this bill could move forward, and I would like to. But I also had some questions relative to some of the details, and I recognize that sometimes the devil is in the details. But if you would work, and George, would you be willing to work with that also?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then,
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I might also draw from. The director of audits for the state, Kathy Polino, or her staff, if I may, as well.
I think that would be, and she's giving us the okay sign there. So I think that's terrific. And then also, I would encourage you to also utilize if Debbie Ferguson would be willing to be a part of that as well. To have her get some input as well, because I thought her testimony was very meaningful.
Thank you.
So with that, then Representative Field, just work with staff as far as when you're ready to, when you have a framework for the amendments to move forward.
Thank you.
Then that would be, then we can get those drafted and brought forward. So that would be terrific. Okay, with that.
Mr. Chair, may I ask one question to the committee?
George?
George Dunford, the Department of Administrative Services. I also recommend that Representative Butler and your staff involve Legislative Fiscal as well. They were very much involved with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in crafting House Bill 2026.
Good point.
Chair, that's an excellent idea, and if I could work with Dallas Wyand, I think Mr. Dunford has some excellent background with Mr. Wyand, so I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that when that suggestion was made that Dallas would be the person to talk to. He's kind of our backup staff for our committee here.
Well,
so
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. And also, I would also let you know, not to limit it to those folks. So if there's other people that you want to draw from, I have no objection to that.
Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. With that, then, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2026, and we're going to move right into a public hearing on House Bill 2382. I'm going to open the public hearing on that, and Jim, would you give us a rundown on House Bill 2382, please?
Yes, sir. House Bill 2382 requires an annual audit or review of accounts and fiscal affairs of municipal corporations. Sets conditions for the conduct of an audit or review. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. We have with us Representative Nelson, who is the primary sponsor, is the only sponsor for House Bill 2382. And so, Representative, I would like to invite you to go ahead and come forward, please.
Thank you, Chair Kremel. I also have invited my Chief Administrator to come forward, so you're not just hearing from me today. We have information from the individuals for whom we prepared this bill.
Representative, whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you.
We don't need to wait for everything to be passed.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Kremel and distinguished committee members, thank you for allowing us to be here today. The testimony I have is prepared from across the ocean. It comes from Japan because the individual for whom I initiated this bill is Ray Fields. He's the chairman of the McMinnville Rural Fire Protection District Board. And unfortunately, He could not be in Salem today to attend this hearing because he's out of the country due to an illness of his father-in-law. So I have this testimony in writing, and I would like to read it at this time. It is at the specific request of the McMinnville Rural Fire Protection District that the amendments to Chapter 297 of the Oregon laws have been introduced. There are essentially three issues that are being addressed by the proposed amendments to Chapter 297. The first issue is to define the terms audit and review, as these terms are not currently defined in the statute at the present time. The second issue is to clarify within the statute that a municipal corporation does either an audit or a review, one or the other, but not both. The third is to raise the level at which a municipal corporation is required to do an audit as opposed to a review. Before I discuss the individual issues, I would like to let you know how or why we got here requesting this information. The McMinnville Rural Fire Protection District is a unit of local government managed by an elected board of directors consisting of five citizens within this fire protection district. It was formed a month to the day before I was born, May 13, 1943, to provide fire protection to a rural area adjacent to the city of McMinnville, Oregon. The city furnishes fire protection services, fire prevention services, and rescue services to the district on an annual contractual basis. Funding for this contract comes from property taxes levied by the fire protection district on taxable property within its district as determined by our Yamhill County assessor. Voters in this fire protection district approved a new tax base in the amount of $150,000 in the May 15, 1990 election. State law at the time permitted a 6% increase in the tax base, and the district's board anticipated, with this annual increase, that revenue would continue to be sufficient to meet its future contract costs. The passage of ballot measure 50, however, in 1997 substantially changed the funding picture for the fire district. Measure 50 directed a rollback of the assessed value of property in the fire district to 90% of its 95 to 96 values. It also set a permanent tax rate of 95.76 cents per thousand of assessed value. Finally, it limited annual tax base increases to 3% plus the value of new construction within the fire district. After implementation of that notorious ballot measure 50, the fire district's total revenues fell to a level below the level it had contracted with the city of McMinnville for the provisioning of services. The fire district voters approved an 18 cents per thousand five-year optional serial levy in the November 02 election in order to bring revenues back to a level that was in keeping with the contract between the fire district and the city of McMinnville. For the first time, the fire district's combined revenues and expenses exceeded $500,000 in fiscal year 2003-04 by $37,469. Of this amount of combined revenue and expenditures, $26,900 of combined revenue and expenditures were directly attributable to a special county-wide communications levy that was a pass-through to the city of McMinnville to offset costs involved in the purchase of communications equipment for the fire service. The end result is that the fire district's regular combined revenues and expenses exceeded $500,000 by $10,569. Because of this, the Audits Division of the Secretary of State's office has informed our fire district that under interpretation of the current statute, the fire district is now required to have an audit as opposed to a review. The end result is that the district has to pay an additional $1,000 more than it would have had to pay if it had simply had a review. One question might be, is it worth the extra $1,000 to the taxpayers on the fire district, in the fire district, to have an audit rather than a review, when it appears the only difference between the two is the verification by the auditors that the bank accounts are what they are represented to be and the imposition of additional unnecessary paperwork? The fire district's board does not feel that this is a wise use of the taxpayers' money. In addition, the fire district board and its accountant do not believe that the statute should be interpreted to mean the sum of the total revenues from all sources and expenses for a particular fiscal year. We believe that it should be if either the total income or the total expenses exceed a certain amount, that an audit would be in order. It is for these reasons that the fire district has requested the amendments to Chapter 297. I would like to address the specific requested changes. And you'll see on the next page, those are highlighted in blue. The first change includes definitions of the terms audit and review. Actually, it is the addition of a new section that requires the Secretary of State to define the terms in accordance with certain criteria, thereby leaving the definitions of these two terms used in the art of accounting flexible as the accounting industry changes. And I'm sure you've read those already on your own. The second change involves Section 297.425 of the existing statute, which currently requires an audit and review. As can be seen in the following language, every municipal corporation shall be audited and reviewed at least once each calendar or fiscal year. And there is the change. As a practical matter, we don't do both. We do one or the other. This can be seen in the existing following Section 297.435, which establishes the threshold at which an audit, a review, or neither shall be done. ORS 297.435, (2)(Part A), establishes the threshold at which the municipal corporation is not required to have either an audit or review. On the other hand, ORS 297.435, Section 3, Section A, establishes the threshold at which the municipal corporation may have a review rather than audit. 297.435, exemption from audit. And there again is that part of this statute. The proposed language basically changes the ands to ors, thereby clarifying the intent of the statute. It just does not make sense in the existing statute to combine revenues and expenses to determine an audit threshold. In your own business, you are not doing $500,000 in business if you have revenues of $250,000 and expenses of $250,000. You're doing only $250,000 in business. Finally, the fire district is asking the legislature to take into account the value of money. At the time the initial legislation was passed, when it established the upper limit of $500,000. That was the upper limit. The research done and found on a website called the Economic History Services, in a work done by Samuel H. Williamson called What is the Relative Value? Economic History Services, April 15, 2004, was the following information. In 2003, $500,000 from 1977 is worth $1,517,680 if you use the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, or $1,200,000 plus using the GDP deflator, are $1,460,000 using the unskilled wage, are $2,050,000 using the GDP per capita, are $2,700,000 using the relative share of GDP.
Mr. Chair, you can let all of those acronyms go by.
Well, I should have known. I just suspected I might just be having to contribute to something.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd voluntarily tell a good representative, I believe that's a $1 bill sticking out there. She can go ahead and take that out and put a 10 in it if she'd like.
Thank you. I will certainly do my contributing. Anyway, I don't need to go over the description of those series. You know what each one of those are, and the definitions are listed here for these. And I'll be darned if I'm going to repeat those acronyms for another $10. The point is, we know that it costs more today than it did 25 years ago for goods and services, certainly back to the month before I was born. The fire district feels that based upon the information you've just been given, it is just simply reasonable, and that's all we're asking. It's reasonable to raise the threshold in 297.435 section 3 subsection A to $1,000,000 before an audit is required. In considering the proposed language, I would like to point out that a small municipal corporation like this one, which accumulates funds over a period of years for an anticipated capital expenditure, does not make much money. The only time that the necessity for an audit would or should occur would be if either the total revenue or the total expenditure in a calendar or fiscal year exceeded $1,000,000. The other changes that are combined in House Bill 2382 are changes to other sections of ORS, Oregon Revised Statutes, darn it, such that those sections will be in agreement with the main changes we are requesting here. This bill is important not only to the McMinnville Rural Fire Protection District, but to all of the small districts in the special districts in the state of Oregon. Passage of this bill should provide substantial savings to the taxpayers in their respective districts so they can continue to procure those services that they so desperately need for the good citizens of our state. I hope you'll consider this testimony and pass this measure.
Thank you, Representative. Did you have anything to...
Good morning. Yes, I do. Yes. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jackie Howard. I work in Representative Donna Nelson's office, and I'll be reading written testimony from Kathleen Bernards, who is a CPA in McMinnville, Oregon. And she writes, I am a certified public accountant in near continuity who conducts municipal audits and reviews, as well as preparing tax income tax returns. I am writing to you in support of House Bill 2382. I have been auditing and reviewing the financial statements of small and medium-sized municipalities for 25 years. Many of my clients are special purpose districts, such as fire and sanitary districts, that have been subject to the lesser attestation standards of a review for all of the years that I have provided services to them. Recently, several of them have been required to pay for the much more expensive level of a quote audit because inflation has caused their transaction totals to exceed the dollar threshold that requires an audit under Oregon statutes. My clients and I do not believe that this is necessarily the best of the use of taxpayers' money in these small districts. The origin of this bill was a request from one of my clients, McMinnville Rural Fire Protection District, to the Secretary of State Division of Audits, that the dollar threshold for requiring an audit and requiring an audit versus a review of a municipality's financial statements be raised. I discussed the issue with my client and reviewed correspondence with the Division of Audits during the drafting of this bill. In that process, we noted the following ambiguous or outdated provisions in the old statutes that we all agree should be updated. One, the dollar threshold of $500,000 used to differentiate between an audit and a review had been in effect for several decades. If adjusted for inflation during that time, it would now be in excess of $1 million. House Bill 2382 raises the threshold to $1 million. The determination of whether an entity's transactions exceeded the limit was ambiguous. The Division of Audits has traditionally interpreted the definition to mean that the entity's total receipts should be added to its expenditures. Mm-hmm. The sum of these two numbers should be compared to the threshold. Many of my clients interpreted the Oregon revised statutes to mean that the total receipt and total expenditures should be compared separately to the threshold. The language of House Bill 2382 clearly states that the latter would not be the case under the new law. The old law did not have a clear definition of the accounting terms, quote, audit and, quote, review. Section 4 of House Bill 2382 more clearly explains how the terms audit and review will be defined under the statute and relates them to authoritative pronouncements of my profession. I urge you to encourage the legislature to pass this bill. I obviously have no vested interest in it because it will result in a decrease in my fees as my clients reduce their level of attestation engagements from an audit to a review. She was unable to attend to testify on the floor of the House today because she is in the midst of tax filing season.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there questions for either Representative Nelson or for Jacqueline? Representative Butler, I see a smile on your face, which probably indicates that you have some questions that you would like to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that there are certainly some salient issues that have been brought forward to us in this bill by Representative Nelson. I'm anxious to hear other testimony. I will say, Mr. Chair, that both terms audit and review are terms of art, and perhaps when these were stuck into the when these were put into the Oregon Revised Statutes, they weren't carefully crafted and inserted in there, where it talks about a municipal agency requiring both an audit and a review. Back during then, maybe an audit was a fiscal examination of books, and a review was to make sure that the buildings were still standing. So I'm anxious to get some historical perspective of this, and appreciate Representative Nelson bringing these issues forward for us, and for the way in which he's representing her constituency in this regard. That's most appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Representative Nelson? And Representative Orr, Ms. Howard, do we have any idea what, for example, a municipal corporation that is 500 that reaches a $500,000 level, what an audit or a review costs them to do? Do we have any idea of that?
I do not know, but I'd be happy to ask CPA Kathleen Bernards.
Okay, that might be helpful for the committee to have, you know, so we can kind of put things in perspective in that respect. Representative Dingfelder?
Mr. Chair, as a follow-up to that, and that's an excellent question, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, Representative, but it would also be helpful to get information about how many municipalities or special districts that are currently required to receive an audit and or review, because I'm glad you're trying to clarify those terms of art, would no longer be required to have an audit under the new threshold. I think that would be helpful because, obviously, if we raise the threshold, there's going to be some special districts, municipalities that wouldn't be required to have a review, and I think that would be helpful information to have, and maybe other people. I'm seeing that the auditor's office, I think, has that information, so that would be helpful in our decision-making.
Thank you, Representative Dingfelder. We'd be happy to find that information if an individual here does not already have it.
Okay. Thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you very much for your time, Chair Crummell, and members of the committee.
One other, I do have one other question for you, Representative. I guess I take the, and I know you do too, take the accounting of the public's money very seriously. What I'm wondering is raising the threshold a good idea on any municipality, when, especially at a time now when we're being questioned as to the efficacy of our use of public funds? And isn't it a good idea to make sure that we do have our cities, counties, fire districts, special districts having to go through that audit process, so that they can justify, if you will, and substantiate the expenditures that they've made on the public's behalf? And then that also, I think, leads them from a standpoint of making sure that their internal controls are in place and effective, so that when recommendations are made by the auditors, that they then, and then that there's some follow-up, that they put those recommendations into place to try to, you know, of course, keep their processes clean. And do you agree, or?
Chair Crummell, I do not know the extent of any criminal activity of those involved in these small municipal districts. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to ask the Justice Department if that has occurred. I don't believe it has in this case, and I just don't know. I have felt that according to the individuals who are involved in, I have several different districts within my legislative district, their purpose is usually of such a service level to, you know, the members, that it would be very doubtful that something like that would occur, because they're all, you know, committed to the same program by, you know, being assessed.
Well, I think the part of it, and I guess what I'm driving at is not so much the suspicion of illegal activity and that sort of thing, but making sure that the processes are clean, that their processes, that they utilize good processes, and that they do have internal, you know, good internal controls. Because, you know, for us in this building, $500,000, $1 million, you know, that doesn't sound like very much money.
Budget does.
There's $1 million right there. But when you get out into the general public, you know, even $100,000 sounds like a lot of money. And it is.
A lot to me.
And it is.
$100,000 sounds like a lot to me.
You know, and considering what we make as legislators, it's really a lot. But keeping that in mind, then, is that accountability for what we do with the public's dollars. And again, whether it's, you know, 100,000 or 500,000 or a million or 11.9 billion, you know, having those internal controls in place. And that's the one thing that I have a little concern about in terms of raising thresholds and that sort of thing. But I do appreciate the concerns that you have brought forward on behalf of Mr. Fields.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I would say that budget does, now that we're done talking about amounts of money, that budget does runs most of my cities and counties for the better part of a year. So that's why it's very important, and Representative Nelson brings that forward. You know, when you're used to working in billions and trying to budget for millions or hundreds of millions, these amounts that may not sound like much are significant amounts to the small constituencies that we have and within our municipalities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. as Senator Edward Dirksen once said, you know, a million here, or, well, actually, he was using the term billion. A billion here and a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Big money.
Oh, and Representative, let's see, I have you down for about $3 that you owe our pig.
I will attempt to find my banker. She didn't bring her purse today.
That's always a good excuse. However, her office is close to mine. Let me call Phil Hopkins and Perry Ankerson up, please. And Phil, I'll have you go first, and then Mr. Ankerson. And just go ahead whenever you're ready. We're ready to go. And
good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Crummell, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Hopkins. I'm an audit manager with the Secretary of State Audits Division. I've been there 22 years. I'm here today to provide testimony on House Bill 2382. I'd like to say up front that our position on this bill is neutral, but what we thought it was important to the committee to provide information to help you make an informed decision about the impact of this house, of this bill, should it go through. Okay? When we looked at this bill, it appears to be two-pronged. One is there is a lot of changes in the language of municipal audit law where they want to include the word review next to the word audit in its context. Historically, I just want to backtrack a little bit. This is called the Municipal Audit Act of 1941 and has been in place since that time. And so I think what was expected by this law was that it was an intent that all governments should be subject to an audit. However, I think the legislature realized even way back then that these things could be a financial burden to the smaller governments. So one section of the law says everybody, basically what it says is everybody's subject to an audit except, one, all counties and school districts must be audited regardless. The second part is that if your financial activities for a year are below certain thresholds, They don't want governments to have to, you know, have to pay a lot of money for an audit. I mean, for instance, some of these governments only bring in a couple thousand dollars a year, or even less, you know, and so you don't want to subject them to a $2,000 audit when you're only bringing in a few hundred bucks or whatever. So there was a section in the law that was put in place there to show the exceptions. So I think it's understood that in the law that its intent, realizing this is years ago, was just to talk about audits in general. Now, nevertheless, having seen that, I've had some conversations with Mr. Fields. He called our office. As you know, this previous testimony had talked about that. And his take on the law was, he said, you know, it's not really very clear. And he says, my take on this and how it's intended to be is this and or and stuff like that. He says, I don't believe that the audits division is interpreting the law correctly. And I remember telling him at the time, and I said, well, you know, you are the very first person that ever brought this up. But nevertheless, I want to give you the benefit of the doubt. So I contacted our attorney general and asked for their opinion on how this law is to be interpreted. And they said, and they responded to me, and I have a letter. I don't have it here today. I wasn't expecting that. But it said that we were interpreting the law right. Nevertheless, I think that some of the amendments that they have in here, it's probably good. You know, it's intended to clarify the law. And I think that should those amendments go into place, it's not going to impact, you know, how we perform our function. The fact that they want to use reviews and audits up there in the same line and stuff like that, I don't see that as a problem, with two exceptions. And so I want to point you to that part. Page 1, Section 1, Sub 3, the issue about contracts in here, they put a clarification there and says the municipal corporation will furnish a copy of the completed contract. Okay, so here it just says a copy of, currently under the law, it says the contract should be supplied. In practice, the audits division has always looked to the firms to supply a copy of the contract. But that isn't really the issue. The issue is that you might remember I was here last Thursday on House Bill 2166, and what we're trying to do is remove that administrative burden of them having to file copies, because we don't feel that that's necessary. So we don't like that particular part of it.
I do remember what we're trying to accomplish.
The second issue on page 3, section 4, talks about, it says in here, the Secretary of State, by rule shall define the terms audit and review. That's okay. But it says in adopting the rule, the Secretary of State shall consider the definitions given those terms in generally accepted accounting principles and adopted by such bodies as the Government Accounting Standards Board. I see that the intent is good, but really this section, we're talking about auditing standards. We're not talking about generally accepted accounting principles that are used to prepare financial statements. We're really talking about the auditor and their function. And so what this really should say is, instead of generally accepted accounting principles, it should say generally accepted auditing standards. And furthermore, it would not be a body of the Government Accounting Standards Board, but rather those would be the auditing standards and the statements on standards for accounting and review services prescribed by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. It's just a clarification to their clarification. Okay. All right. That's all I want to talk about there, because I think that the weight of this whole bill is clearly not here, but in the other issue that Representative Dingfelder brought up, and I'm glad she did, because that's why we're here, to give you some information. What you have before you is a two-page summary, and we just developed this yesterday. So, but we thought that you would find this most interesting, and I will point out some issues on here. The first page talks about actual billings. We don't have the 2004 reports all processed in that, and they're not all filed, so we had to go back to the last completed year. So if you look at this first set of numbers up at the top left, you'll see that there were 1,642 municipalities out there subject to some form of filing requirement with the Secretary of State. And under the current statutes, 134 would file reviews, 413 are in lieu, as we have defined down here. Those are those smallest governments that are not subject to an audit by an outside account, but rather what they do is they file with our office schedules, and those schedules essentially are a simplified balance sheet and a simplified statement of revenues and expenditures, okay? But it's not subject to an independent review. Nevertheless, those small governments, there's still 25% of those governments out there that are that small and do this. And then you had 1,095 audits. Okay? So in terms, what we did is we provide you with a couple more numbers that you may want to consider or not. Under audit, you see that under revenues and expenditures, those state governments, they account for over $17 billion each year. You know, in terms of revenues and expenditures. And if you were to look just to the column next to it, like those in lieu review, those self-prepared, they're like $9.2 million in revenues and $8.6 in expenditures that year. Well, that's only 0.005%. So in terms of the big picture, they're very small. What I'd like to point out is that these are still individual governments. It's not the state as a whole, but these are, each one stands by its own. And so I think you would want to look both ways at the dollars, but also the number of entities that are impacted. Okay, so that's what you currently have. Under the House Bill 2382, what you do is you find a shift, a clear shift from those that would be subject to audits moving over into the review category. So for instance, looking down here where it says change from current law, you would see that there would be a drop of 397 audits. This is a fuzzy figure, okay? Who knows what it'll be next year, for sure, but that's a pretty good number. So let's say 397 fewer will be subject to an audit. You'll have 167 more reviews and 167 more silk repairs, and then 230 more reviews. So I think the good largest numbers, obviously, is the shift away from audits into something less. And so this would be something that you may wish to consider. Okay? Now, the one, and before I go into the second page, because there are some really interesting numbers in there. The other one is we just kind of took the liberty of coming up with another scenario. Because the way that bill is drafted, it says the criteria you should use to be subject to an audit or any other filing requirement is either revenues or expenditures. But speaking from an auditor's perspective, the risk in whether things are going to go wrong or whether the accountability by governments is not on the revenue side, it's on the expenditure side. Many of these governments, and I can, by way of clear example, many governments go from self-prepares to reviews or from reviews to audits based oftentimes on a single transaction. And that transaction is they either get a grant, either from the federal government or the state. They get like a, it could be $100,000, it could be $1 million, and all of a sudden it throws them up into the next threshold. Or they issue debt, so they have the bond proceeds coming in. Or they go to a bank and get loans. And as a practical matter, I often have conversations with fire districts. It's coincidence in this case, where they will take and save money for a particular year or something. They'll go to the bank, borrow money, but so they get $150,000 to buy a fire truck, all right? And it's just a single transaction comes in. But I think what citizens want to know and what auditors want to know is, was that money spent for the purpose that was intended? I think that if you take and just use revenues, you're really looking at one transaction. But expenditures can be spread over many kinds of transactions. And quite frankly, that's what auditors are testing for the most part, is how's that money spent? Is it spent for its intended uses? So we're looking at this and saying, we don't quite like this either or. If you decide that you want to move ahead on this bill, and if you want to use, instead of what historically has been a formula that, and so I should address that, when we talk about the history draft.
Phil, I'm going to need you to wrap up because we're going to run it. We're going to run out of time, and I want Mr. Ankerson to have a chance to testify as well.
All right. Well, the thing is that we think expenditures is a better measure and not revenue, and so we'd like you to take that into consideration. Okay. Let me quickly just turn to page 2. I just wanted to point out something, a couple things. What I have is I have the municipalities ranked in order of sheer numbers. So, for instance, on the far left column, you have 256 fire districts out there, rural fire protection districts. Under the current law, 128 were subject to an audit. Under the proposed law, or the proposed amendment, that will drop from 128 to 40. And under our suggestion, it would go to 67, which is somewhere in between. But there's a number of districts where there are dramatic drops. Some are not impacted very much. One that I found most interesting was, and you can look at this on your own, obviously, but charter schools. Mm-hmm. I found that one pretty interesting. Right now, we have records of 19 charter schools being out there, and they're all subject to an audit. Under the new standards, 18 of those would be subject to a review, and only one would be subject to an audit. And even as I was sitting here waiting to come up here and present testimony, I wondered if the Department of Education would want to comment on that, or if they had some feelings or some thoughts on that. So you'll see some dramatic drops there. The biggest one is in fire districts, and some irrigation districts, some councils of governments.
Okay.
One of the things that is still in place, I will mention that does not impact it, is that the law did not change the requirement that counties and school districts still be audited. It does not impact them. And they account for 10 of the $17 billion that's out there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate that. Mr. Ankerson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and representatives. I think I'll just put $5 in the pot right now and people approve.
Thank you.
It's also a good cause.
Make sure for the record that you identify yourself.
Indeed. I'm Perry Ankerson. I'm a certified public accountant, which is usually called a CPA. I think it's very relevant. I'm also a municipal auditor on the roster, and I teach a course annually to certified public accountants who want to be municipal auditors, explaining municipal audit law and Oregon budget law. And in general, I also speak for the Oregon Society of CPAs. As a general rule, we don't believe this bill is necessary. A couple things to bring to your attention. We don't believe there's been much issue with any auditor or reviewer understanding audit and review the way it's written right now. The rules with the and have been very clearly delineated, particularly in a publication, the budget manual, by the Department of Revenue. For a number of years, and I don't believe the wording has even changed in a number of years in terms of explaining to both governments and to auditors and reviewers how that system works. Thank you, Phil, very much for doing this research. We did a little cruder version of it in the same period of time, and I like your analysis much better. I think this might not be the time that the state government wants to reduce accountability and transparency of financial transactions out there in the various governments within the state. And I can't prove this to you with empirical studies, but anecdotally, smaller governments need more professional help. When you go in and review and audit those types of governments, you find proportionally, and again this is anecdotally, you find proportionally more adjustments, more errors that have been made. You know, someone mentioned criminal activity. I don't think criminal activity is really what we're talking about here in most cases, but errors have been made. So I think accountability is very good. When there's an audit and review. I believe that the concern that many governments have that somebody will come in and take a look at their transactions probably does create better financial reporting and better accountability on behalf of various governments. Actually, what this bill does is double the amount, generally double the amount of the thresholds for reviews. However, it quadruples the amount for an audit because of the change from and to or in many places. I will agree that there are certain drafting issues in the original bill there, but they really haven't caused any problem along the way, and the definition of audit and review is very clearly delineated in the minimum standards for audits of Oregon municipal corporations and minimum standards for reviews, all by the Secretary of State's office. I don't think there's any confusion by anyone related to that. I also agree also with what Phil said in terms of some of the drafting errors that are there. If you would wish to go forward with this bill, I think we really need to talk about that because there are some significant drafting errors in terms of how we would define audits and reviews. So as a general rule, I think that this committee and ultimately the legislature should consider whether or not reducing accountability at this point in the state's history and with what the political environment is and the other environments that are out there in terms of the press and those sorts of things make that much sense, and consider it in that light. I believe this is a bill chasing a problem that's not really a problem, except apparently to at least one rural fire protection district that's out there. So, incidentally, the Oregon Society of CPA stands ready to assist the committee in any further analysis that you need and to provide any counsel that you might need, and I'm certainly available for any questions.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perry, your testimony is that basically, even though the statutes do, in fact, provide for the terms audit and review to absolutely be used interchangeably, because of other rulemaking process or perhaps in another portion of the statute the terms of audit and review are better explained, you don't see that as a problem here in this particular area?
I suppose if you're going to change this section, you might as well do some of that, but no, I don't see it as a problem, actually, Representative.
But Mr. Chair, I do want to make it abundantly clear that the terms are in fact very specific terms of art, words of art, and that they really can't be used interchangeably. And so when the present municipal under 297.425 says the municipal corporation shall both be audited and reviewed, that's really not accurate in relationship to what certified public accountants, the service you provide.
If I may, actually, there's been a term for a number of years in the Oregon administrative rules about the review of fiscal affairs in governments, and I truly believe that was what was originally referred to in this particular case. Reviews in the professional sense are about 25 to 30 years old, I believe. You recall that too, Phil, around there, in terms of a specific service that's offered by certified public accountants. And notice, no acronyms yet.
You're doing pretty good.
Thank you.
Probably not.
They'll just have a credit, you know, with us.
Okay. Other questions?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Perry's explanation, and I think he's absolutely right. As I read that, and as Representative Dingfelder and I were taking a look at it, I think that originally this probably came into the statute when municipal corporations would both be audited and reviewed, audited as to fiscal and reviewed as to sufficiency, I don't see it as a problem, basically because of what Perry is telling us, that the municipal code in the state then goes on to tell us, and we do have the information from Phil Hopkins that as to what these various thresholds levels are accomplished, both under current actual filings and what would happen under House Bill 2382. But I do believe that we probably ought to take a look at Section 4, the suggestions that Phil Hopkins has made there, and others have made suggestions that perhaps there are some language updates. And then I'm intrigued by the expenditures threshold. Taking a look at that expenditures threshold, particularly in light of what the Secretary of State or the Secretary of State's Audit Division is asking us. But with that, Mr. Chair, I do want to express my appreciation for the Certified Public Accountants coming forward and helping us with this, as well as the Secretary of State's audit and office, and how we can best be of assistance to try and clean up anything that is left to be cleaned up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other questions, Representative? Okay. I don't have anything either. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, then, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 2382? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and...